Well, thank you all for coming. Now we will be reviewing the Bethesda Market site, and we're going to do about a two-hour review. We'll do a long review here. This project is at sketch plan, so we will just be doing a straw vote today for the panel. And who will be presenting?
I'm McLean Quinn from EYA. I will do a few minutes. I'll hand it over to Joe Kevich from FX, and then we have a lot of team members here.
And you want to introduce them all? That'd be great.
Okay,
that'd be great. So before we start, just a reminder that this is being recorded, and the recording will go on the website. All right, please.
Thank you. My name is McLean Quinn. I'm a vice president with EYA. We are the newest member to this project team. We were brought in through a new relationship we've established between our organization and Bernstein, who is the owner and developer of 7121 Wisconsin Avenue, and the joint venture partner in the purchase of the Farm Women's Market with Folger Pratt. If it's okay, we have a lot of people in the room, and we could just kind of one by one have everybody just say who they are and where they're from, and then we may, because there's so much here, have individuals kind of speak to certain questions when it comes up, so it may not just be me or Joe or Jim, but maybe we'll start Kofi over there and work our way around.
Sure. Kofi Monroe, I work in development at Folger Pratt.
Brad Fox, Bowler, who's a civil engineer on the west side.
Matt Bullhouse with Rogers, civil engineer on the right side.
Ted Bulger, landscape architect with land design.
Jason Serino, part of the development group at EYA.
Robbie Brewer, Lurch Early.
Chris Rulin, Lurch Early.
Hi, Heather Delapolsky, Linos and Blocker, land use attorney on the west side. I think we skipped Laura.
Laura Tallarico, Linos and Blocker as well.
Chuck Hathaway, Bernstein Management, Columbia Realty Venture.
Joe Kevich from FX Collaborative.
Jim Michon from FX Collaborative. I will swap out seats there with McLean when we get into the 7126, the west side of Wisconsin.
Bird Bunker with Folger Pratt.
Brian Folger, Folger Pratt.
Alicia Dalhati, Bethesda resident.
Great. Well, so I think what we thought we would do, because the plans that we submitted in the sketch plan were different, obviously, than the plans in the concept plan. But we'd like to take just a few minutes talking about why and how they're different and how we got here to a point where we've included new parcels in the plan, where we've been engaged with several different organizations and stakeholders in the county and in the community, talking about a potential public-private partnership that has expanded the original submission into something that now incorporates two adjacent county parking lots. So spend a couple minutes talking about that, the evolution of how we've gotten to where we are, and then get into the specifics of the design evolution, the way we have tried to respond both to the feedback we heard in the concept plan, DAP, but also the feedback we've heard from the community, the neighbors, other folks in parking planning sort of throughout our process over the last several months. I think folks are pretty familiar with the location of the parcel here, but as a reminder, you have 7126 Wisconsin Avenue, which is on the west side, the left-hand side of the page. That is a property that has been assembled by Folger Pratt, who is one of the three developers represented here today. On the right-hand side, you have the 7121 Wisconsin Avenue parcel, which is represented by EYA and Bernstein. Bernstein is the owner. They have brought us in as their development partner, and we have a programmatic relationship between our organizations. Bernstein as a long-term investor and owner of real estate in the Washington market, and EYA as a developer of residential and mixed-use projects in the market. We've come together organizationally here, but also elsewhere. So those two separate projects on two separate sides of the road with different parties, and then the linking force for us has been the partnership between Folger Pratt and Bernstein to put under contract to acquire, rehabilitate the Farm Women's Market site, which sits just north of 7121 Wisconsin Avenue, this green box represented here. So that's sort of all of the parties together. Context, I think everyone is familiar with the context on Wisconsin Avenue. We think a lot about this context as evolving dramatically. So thinking about how the new True Foods in Solera building have changed the streetscape, change the environment that, that exists here, how the Apex building, the new metro entrances are going to be evolving what exists on Wisconsin Avenue, and how our properties can be part of that evolution and can really create a destination on Wisconsin Avenue, and frankly, for perhaps the first time, on the east side of Wisconsin Avenue, and bring vitality and vibrancy to what is becoming a very, very important corridor in Bethesda. So this was the concept plan that was submitted months and months ago that really sparked the transformation to where we are today. So Folger Pratt submitted their plans. I know we came before you, they came before you, while it was part of the team to share those concepts, received a lot of good feedback. In addition to the DAP meeting, though, there was a roadshow that involved sitting with the town of Chevy Chase, sitting with other key community members, and then obviously the DRC to the concept plan, where we began to hear a recurring message. That recurring message was, this is exciting, it's great to see that the Farm Women's Market site, you know, is going to have a repurposed future here, but anyone who was part of the downtown plan process knows that there was a lot of effort, focus, and deliberation on what happens on the county parking lots, lots 24 and lot 10. Lot 24 sits directly east of the Farm Women's Market, behind the Farm Women's Market 7121 and the Ford building. And then lot 10 sits just south of that on the other side of Leland Street. So those two county parking lots were much discussed during the planning process, were envisioned as becoming new destination parks to the maximum extent feasible in the downtown plan. And so as we began our conversation after having submitted the concept plan, we heard the question from numerous parties, how are you anticipating that potential redevelopment of those into park space? How does your development respond to that potential use in the future on those parking lots? And then Bernstein received a call from Al Rashdi, the head of DOT, saying, you know, this is a unique opportunity for us to try and do something together. Would Bernstein come in and meet with Al and talk about whether there was a plan that might incorporate the county parking lot into the development application that had been submitted? So Bernstein invited us to that meeting, and we all went. We sat with Al Rashdi, his department, and he said that he had been approached by Mike Riley, the head of the Parks Department, about whether this was a unique opportunity that we should all come together and find a way of trying to underground the county's parking spaces, deliver the park envisioned in the master plan on these sites. And that was something Al was receptive to. He wanted to bring to us, but he brought it to us with a caveat or a condition, and that's something I think that's important to talk about, but it's something that's evolved over time. So Al asked us to go back to the drawing board on our project, specifically the component on the east side of Wisconsin Avenue, and think about what we could do to underground the 300 county parking spaces that existed on lot 24 and lot 10. There's about 200 on lot 24, about 100 on lot 10. And asked us to come up with a concept that would pay to underground all of those spaces at no expense to the Department of Transportation, allow for the construction of the park that would be this new important green destination for downtown Bethesda. So that was a sort of a big ask, but it was something that was very exciting to us. Bernstein had engaged in conversations with the Department of Transportation for probably about a decade previous to the downtown plan, you know, being adopted, but this was with a new sense of urgency coming out of parks and DOT, acknowledging that this redevelopment would likely be the only opportunity to do something on a consolidated master plan, comprehensive basis to allow for the creation of those parks. And so we went back to the drawing board. We began to think differently about the site, about the context, and we embarked on what has been a probably a 3-month process of engagement with several various community groups, engagement with the town of Chevy Chase, engagement with a number of agencies within the county, including park and planning, to talk about what a development concept that would deliver the park might look like, how we might be able to make a meaningful contribution to undergrounding that parking. And we ultimately went back to the Department of Transportation with a concept that we thought could pay to underground all of the parking by allowing a component of development on Lot 24 and Lot 10, generating a park that would be about 2.7 acres of new park space adjacent to the existing 2.1 acre park that exists just north of the site. So, we went back and thought again, comprehensively thought about this site in its context in Bethesda, the evolution of Wisconsin Avenue, the gravity of the retail corridor on Bethesda Avenue. We thought about how new world where there's a metro station a block away from here, where the frontage on Bethesda Avenue as it approaches Wisconsin is going to be home now to the surface expression of the Capitol Crescent Trail, to a new plaza at the Artery Building, to JBG's redevelopment, to the county's park at the intersection of Woodmont and Bethesda. We started thinking about how we could really enhance that energy, create this destination on the east side of Bethesda, or the east side of Wisconsin Avenue, in a new destination for Bethesda. At the same time, I think we understood where Al was coming from in his request that we find a way of paying for the undergrounding of the parking. Undergrounding 300 parking spaces is incredibly expensive. You know, it might be a $15 million project if it was in a really simple configuration and it wasn't public parking. It could be a $20 million project or a $24 million project if it were all the bells and whistles that one might normally associate with a public parking garage. We went and thought of it in the simplest context. If we had to build those 300 spaces the way we would build, our parking spaces, how could we do it? And what kind of contribution might we need to make through that process to from a density standpoint, to offset those incremental costs? Sort of simultaneously with that entire process that we were going through, the Bethesda magazine published an article about parks, which I think captured a lot of the sentiment that what we were hearing from various stakeholders, sentiment regarding when are these parks going to be developed, these parks that were outlined in the master plan. How are they going to be paid for? If it costs $8.5 million to buy 0.4 acres in downtown Bethesda for the Capitol Crescent Trail Park, then where will the money to underground this parking on Lots 24 and Lot 10 come from? And with a parks department that has 420 parks to maintain and $30 million per year to spend across all of those parks, how do you make something like this happen? That's where, as we began to engage with key stakeholders in the community, with the Parks Department and with others, we began to get a sense that there was a real desire to see the parks happen in the near term, and an understanding from some folks that perhaps the best way to see those parks come together in the foreseeable future would be through a public-private partnership that included a component of development on Lot 24 and Lot 10. So, we started to look at the site comprehensively. We started to think about all the elements that would need to come together to create the great park, to underground the parking, and to think about how we could achieve those goals. Obviously, there's a tremendous amount of impervious surface today on the site, a tremendous amount of the site's dedicated to surface parking. But here you can really see the sort of triangular yellow shape on the right-hand side is Lot 24. The yellow shape of the parking lot on the bottom is Lot 10. Those were the parcels we were asked to go back and think about, and we thought about them in the context of the Farm Women's Market, in the context of this very central location in Bethesda, this evolving Wisconsin Avenue location. But we didn't sort of think about them as it related to their current context of a sea of parking. We thought about how you could comprehensively design a park network that took Elm Street Park and enhanced it, that built onto Elm Street Park, including components to the project that were missing in Elm Street Park that might activate this destination. And so we came up with a concept here, and use the mouse if people can see it, where we stretched our residential building behind the Ford building, adding what is essentially a new wing of development here, adding a retail pavilion here, and then adding 18 townhouses on lot 10. That allowed us to take about 0.4 acres of park space on lot 10, about 2.25 acres of park space between the Farm Women's Market and lot 24, and add those components to Elm Street Park. So in sort of a comprehensively planned way, you now have a 4.8-acre park in downtown Bethesda. In our conversations with Mike Riley, Mike is incredibly excited about what this could mean for the Parks Department. I think he feels that this is a park that could include all of the key elements that make parks great. It could include the social gathering uses, the opportunities for things like the farmers market, for festivals, for concerts on the green or yoga on the lawn, active uses, things like a playground could be easily accommodated, dog park easily accommodated when you're planning a 4.8-acre park. I think there's a real sense from many in the neighborhood that Elm Street Park is underutilized today, that it is a buffer park. And I think a lot of folks are looking for more than a buffer park. And what's described in the Bethesda plan is that this is to be a destination active park. And so by putting all these pieces together, we think you can accommodate all of those different uses on this site. It's something that we're really excited about, but it's something that has evolved even before the submission of our sketch plan, from the original concept that we developed to what we submitted and what you saw in our materials today. So the original ask I mentioned was to come up with a plan that undergrounded all the parking at no cost to the county. We came up with the plan you see on the left, which included residential extending over retail here. The vision for all of the retail and for the Farm Women's Market that has gotten us really excited is to create a 21st century market, to create a food hall, to create an enduring legacy for the Farm Women's Market, but in a 21st century adaptation. Think Union Market, if you've been to Union Market in D.C. A really engaging, dynamic place that draws people to this site, that celebrates the legacy of the Farm Women's Market, but does it in a way that's sustainable by creating a critical mass of 25 to 30,000 square feet of retail use. Standalone basis, the Farm Women's Market will never be able to have that draw, have that critical mass. Combined with surrounding retail, we think you really could create a very strong destination. So the original concept plan we conceived of had this 70-foot tall extension to the tower running along lot 24 and included residential over top of the retail base. You see sort of two elevations of the building with that component. In conversations with a group of stakeholders, including the town of Chevy Chase, Council President Reamer, Mike Riley, Gwen, and others, there was a consensus or a compromise about what might feel like an appropriate amount of development for the community. That compromise was based on the assumption that if we were to reduce the amount of density on the site, the public, in one form or another, would have to come up with a piece of the cost for the underground parking that we were no longer able to support, having lost the residential component of the project. But the feeling at the time and the direction that the compromise the group reached was that a sketch plan without the residential above the retail component behind the Farm Women's Market was generally more palatable to the community stakeholders, and therefore was the guidance we were given to submit. I think we liked, and we'll get into all of the architecture, that's my last slide, just a second here. We liked the framing of the residential over top of the retail behind the Farm Women's Market. You can see the Farm Women's Market from Bethesda Avenue if you're standing in front of the Apple Store looking up Bethesda Avenue. You can see it, but it sort of disappears. It doesn't have a backdrop. It's not framed. It's not engaged in its surroundings. We felt that the 70-foot building behind designed the Farm Women's Market, provided that backdrop, that it has celebrated the building, framed the building, and created a setting that was enhancing to the historic asset. That said, you know, we are comfortable, you know, knowing that the public would have to come up with the parking cost that we can't come up with from the lost residential in pursuing this sort of compromise solution. So that's more time than you probably have for an introduction normally, and so I just wanted to let folks have a sense of how we've gotten here, which is very different from where we submitted. The sketch plan itself reflected two alternatives. It reflected an alternative where we are developing on lot 24 and lot 10, undergrounding the parking and delivering the park. That is obviously our preferred alternative, but it is contingent on finding the public resources to pay for some of the parking costs. It's contingent on a number of political factors that are outside of our control. There's a county executive action that's required through the Department of Transportation. There is county council action that's required. So while this was the conclusion and the goal and the compromise of our stakeholders when we left and agreed to file a sketch plan, we also agreed that we would file a version that more closely mirrors the concept plan, which is a standalone redevelopment of the 7121 Wisconsin and Farm Women's Market buildings in the event that either the public resources weren't made available to help offset the cost of the underground parking, or that the disposition of those parking lots didn't happen. I'll leave it there, because you'll see in the concept plan that Joe's going to present in a minute, you'll see specific responses to some of the comments that have come out of the DAP process and other community feedback. You'll see a slight elevation, obviously, in the articulation of the building and the general design of the building here. Obviously, you'll see an impressive transformation on the other side of the street. This is a snapshot as to where we are today. It's a snapshot of this evolving process, and we are obviously still relatively early in documenting what this public-private partnership between us, the Department of Transportation, parks would look like. That said, we're incredibly excited. We think that this has the potential to be transformative to downtown Bethesda, and our biggest concern, while we would move ahead with our standalone building without this plan, is that without something like this, we think that the reality is that those surface parking lots are going to stay there for a very, very long time. That's certainly the belief of Al Rashdi. It's the belief of Mike Riley. They don't see their departments making the decision to spend the money to underground those parking spaces to build that park, given the other constraints that the county has fiscally, given the other demands for green space and investment in other parts of the county that have, frankly, more need than downtown Bethesda. So that's the big picture. I'll hand it over to Joe, and we're obviously all here to be as responsive as we can today.
So following all of that, in consideration of that and the previous DAP meeting we had in May, we took a step back and looked at some of the other precedents that are on the website as well, and thought that we really want to address the massing of the buildings with more consideration of the comments that we got, the design guidelines that are outlined on the county website as well. And so we came up with a new sketch plan that I think the buildings specifically address some of the comments we heard last time. They also take into consideration the massing requirements and design guidelines. And then we also gave a little bit of a hint of the direction we're heading in terms of the articulation of the facades and materials. I'll say that that's early days, and I think that I would like to focus a little bit more today on the massing and the composition of the buildings as they relate to the civic space around the Farm Women's Market. So we'll start on the east side of the street with option A, which is the option that McLean described that extends onto lot 24 and lot 10. And both option A and option B on this east side have a similar tower expression, and they both kind of address the talk a little bit more explicitly about where we vary from that current messing, and addressing the step back guidelines specifically. We heard loud and clear about cantilevers on both sides, and so that will be a consideration on both sides. For this one, we have some very specific comments related to the north side, looking at how we relate to the farmers market. And one of the suggestions explicitly was to create a sort of vertical expression on the building that addresses the location and size of the farmers market, to take that into consideration, and also creating a few more corners along that north to really articulate the building. Looking at the separation of the building, the Ford building to the south, we've worked to make sure we have 45 feet that's in the design guidelines for that separation between buildings. And then in the lot 24 configuration and also standalone, looking at the articulation of the building as a basis towards the east. You'll see in both versions an expression of how that's related.
Yeah, so I guess something, and Joe just reminded me, one of the other moves we made between our initial concepts in response to DOT and what we submitted for the sketch plan was to rethink about the scale of the building behind the Farm Women's Market, not just its height, but also its stretch to the north towards Willow Lane. So there was feedback from a number of stakeholders about how important the east-west connection from Wisconsin Avenue into the park was. And so we pulled the retail pavilion building, we're calling it, back so that it sits within the same dimension as the Farm Women's Market building. So it doesn't extend to the north or to the south of that building. It is as tall on the north-south dimension as that building. And so you're really getting that strong draw from Wisconsin Avenue into the park, both here and in this mid-block area, which is a key focus of the plan. So I missed that.
So here we'll talk a little bit more about design guidelines. Most explicit design guidelines that we were looking at were the step backs above the base. I think previously we had a step back and then we cantilevered back out over. We're looking at the requirements for this for the step backs above the base at 10 feet on the north side and on the Wisconsin Avenue from the design guidelines. The guidelines don't explicitly mention a step back facing the park east. So I don't know if we can find that, but we looked at creating step backs of 5 feet above the base as a sort of a compromise. In order to maintain the distance between the Ford building is built a little bit closer to the property line than what design guidelines require. So we're actually required to step back even further than what is that sort of 22'6" that's in the design guidelines. We're stepping back a full 28 feet from the property line on the south. So that's partially why the compromise to 5 feet step backs on the north side. And then on Wisconsin, we also sort of split the difference and maintained a 5 foot step back facing the park to the east in order to maintain a step back there. So there's considerations here. You can see in plan, design guidelines on the left, as explicitly for the tower, as explicitly read. One of the other things I forgot to mention is that we are incorporating a step back at our penthouse levels. Is not explicitly part of the design or suggested design guidelines. So here you can see that. We actually achieve a slightly smaller floor plate as a result of this. So that's one of the considerations we're taking into account. And here you can see a quick sketch of the massing for the option A on the east parcel. You can see the tower expression with the sort of slot indicated where the Farm Women's Market is located on to the north. We're indicating that might have a slightly glassier facade. We're working on that. And then the building sort of frames itself around these
our perspective, part of this design evolution has been a direct response to feedback we received from the town of Chevy Chase, which was a request to think about how this building fronts the town and the future potential park. And so as we started thinking about certainly anything that would put building directly fronting the town of Chevy Chase, we thought about warming up the facade, warming up the materials, thinking about something that would respond more to the character of the single family residential neighborhood across the park from us. And then we also thought about how we could activate the park by putting these townhouse units lining the park at the bottom of the base of the building on that wing that would put eyes into the park, front doors on the park, activation of the park, so that it would become an inviting place, not something sort of tucked behind the back of the building, but something that was celebrated and invited people safely through.
And here you see another view. This I think more clearly illustrates the way we've integrated this lot on the north side, West Point for the Farmland's Market, and the retail pavilion sort of adjacent to the Farmland's Market, the two-story pavilion with outdoor spaces on the second floor. And looking at heights, we're showing two separate heights because we are also including lot 24 here, so the height limits on the Wisconsin side are different than the ones on the lot 24 side. So the blue line indicates lot 24. So we have 70 feet allowable on lot 24, 175 allowable where our tower goes, and then the area actually just to the east of the floor building has a slightly higher height allowed on at 90 feet on the lot 24 side. We're not taking advantage of that right now. We're basically trying to stay within the 70-foot limit. And here you can see how it relates, looking at a section that cuts east-west. The west side of the site, which Jim will talk about in just a minute. And then we sort of see how we step up and down by Wisconsin Avenue. Some precedents. These are some projects of ours at MS Blackridge. From New York, we think that this is the kind of expression that fits well with context. Working with McLean and Chuck at Bernstein, we think that this is really the direction we're going to be headed in the next iteration of the project. You can see here that the building on the left, Greenwich Lane, in New York City, is the development of St. Vincent's Hospital site in Greenwich Village. A lot of very careful articulation of the facade to incorporate masonry and glass in a contemporary expression of the traditional technology. And here's some other precedents, specifically about townhouses. EYA has a lot of experience developing townhomes, and we do as well. So there's sort of a combination, we think, of some traditional materials, again, with a more contemporary expression. And the retail pavilion, we think, will also be something that harkens back to some more traditional materials, but has a more contemporary expression over the outdoor spaces. The masonry we consider it in terms of its articulation of detail and integration, and the image on the upper left. So diving into the plans, these we can go through relatively quickly. This just shows you the disposition of the buildings on the site, the two retail pavilions, the Farmland's Market pavilion, and the tower and the low rise portion on lot 24. Going to the ground floor, you can see how we incorporated a lot of retail on the Farmland's Market to really activate that space. We have the move coming from Wisconsin, going east across the site up towards Willow Lane. We have incorporated Willow Lane an entry to the Willow Ridge parking structure. On Leland to the south, there's an entry and an exit to the parking structure. So the entrance only on Willow Lane and exit on Leland. We have a lobby that fronts the park, but also fronts the winner through drop-offs and a loading space that's really sort of embedded within the building to relate to make sure that that's not.
What is that piece to the right of the retail building?
That's the ramp down into the parking.
So that would be for cars to go down?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Just two things to touch on. Also forgot to mention. We have been in conversations with Edens, who is the retail developer of Union Market and who is really a thought leader in placemaking retail, activating spaces like this with the types of destination uses that are the new retail, the type of retail that can be successful. So we are in conversations with them about bringing them in as a partner in this project to be the for what the inclusion of the county lots have allowed us to do is that we have now been able to take our loading for our parking garage and our retail off of the Wooner, off of the Farm Women's Market property, and push it to Willow and to Leland, so that that truck traffic, the vehicular traffic, the 300 county parking spaces, the 200 or whatever it will be for the multifamily building, those parking spaces are accessed not from the historic settings surrounding the Farm Women's Market, but from the existing public streets.
So that ramp then would be essentially accommodating cars all day long?
Yes. That's something that we're very preliminary in the studying of what we would need to do to accommodate the 300 public spaces and the residential spaces. We've designed, and we have it in our appendix, you probably saw it in the package, we've designed right now a two-level parking garage, with the division being public parking spaces would be on the top level, the residential spaces on the bottom level. At 500 plus or minus spaces, 500, 525, that's a point where having a second garage access point can become important. It's something that the Department of Transportation would evaluate. We have the loading for the Ford building immediately adjacent to us on Leland, and so we don't have the queuing studies yet. We haven't done a full analysis of how that turning movements and queuing would work, but we have heard from both the retailers, from the community, that the idea of having multiple access points to the garage is important. So that's what gave rise to the second entrance off the building.
And then just taking a step up the building to a typical low-rise, you can see we have two floors, and so low-rise is separate. What is the opportunity to sort of have these if that's necessary in the day in the tower?
Two of the most common pieces of feedback we've received in our community meetings, and at this point, I think we've had the opportunity to present to north of 200, maybe 250 Bethesda Chevy Chase residents at our two community meetings. The key considerations that we've heard, in addition to concern about, you know, the size of the park space relative to the development, the location of the development, those types of things have been: how can parking be maintained, because this parking is very valuable to the residents, especially those who are challenged from accessing the site by foot. So how can we ensure that the public parking is still accessible, perhaps through a phasing of the development, but also how can we make sure it's easy for them to use? And then we've also heard that Lot 10, which is represented here, is actually a cut-through folks use, given the challenges of single-directional traffic that exists on a lot of the streets in Chevy Chase to avoid cut-throughs through the neighborhood. So maintaining north-south connections so folks have an access point to get around some of that traffic challenges was important. So that those are factors that shape the design here.
And we'll take a quick look at option B, which is the standalone 7121 on this side. Here you can see that tower. It's a very similar expression to what we saw in the combined lot. Here we've incorporated articulation of the facade. We plan to have, I'll show you this in just a second on the ground floor plan, potential future use when the park is developed. So we're preserving some space
south of the tower. We pushed, the building was previously about 15 feet from the property line on the north side. We've extended the building to meet that property line in this configuration. And so that allows us to have a slightly larger retail. Here you can see that potential future active use. I think it's about 1,500 square feet. So we reserve that for when the park is developed.
That was a specific request we've gotten from both the community and from others, is to think, even if we develop this scenario and the park doesn't get built for 15 years, 20 years, how could you embrace the park at the point, you know, someday it did get built?
Moving up into the base of the tower, you talked about the building, you can see the expression of the land and the tower. Here you can see that 45-foot distance between the tower and the fourth tower and our building. This configuration has slightly longer, because we pushed it further to the north, these bays on the south side are slightly longer to achieve the maximum floor plate we had. And then just because of the disposition of the parking below, the core in this configuration is on the west side, so the upper terrace flips. And here you can see the parking below. It's relatively constrained. We've had to push into the Harmon's Market site a little bit below the river. Turn it over to Jim to talk about the west side.
Okay. Bear with us for a few more minutes here. We'll cover the west side and then we'll circle back for general questions on both. Taking a look back at when we presented to you guys the first time, you know, a lot of the comments were the same across both sides. There was a desire to truly understand what the design guidelines set up as a massing strategy versus what we were showing. So we can show that. Addressing setbacks, cantilevers being overdone, this idea of the law, you know, stepping back the building above a base, but then bringing the cantilever all the way back into that step back and beyond as this heavy sort of monolithic cantilever. We certainly understand that now that we've seen some of the other projects in the area. So I think that we've started to address that as well. Increasing the height of the base and adding solidity. There was early in the previous design, there was this play between the more solid, more masonry textured top versus this more open, glassy retail base. So we've started to reverse that a little bit, bring a little bit more of a substantial feel to the base, increase that by a couple more floors so that now the base truly feels like it's substantial enough to support a tower. So the design guidelines for our site propose 15 feet along Miller, 10 feet along both Bethesda and Wisconsin. And then finally, it suggests a 22.5-foot tower separation along the back side here. A couple of things that we've looked at in our conversations with planning staff is that what we've started with is a 5-foot setback now from both Wisconsin and Bethesda. So this surface all the way along here, that surface is set back 5 feet from this surface, and this surface up here at the top is set back 5 feet from this surface. So what we've done with the corners now, we understand how much these corners sort of mean to the placemaking of this intersection. What we've done is we've tried to just articulate those in the massings. We had looked at a previous concept where, you know, basically if you just pull this line straight down, then it's just the 5 foot setback from the base. But what we've started to do is figure out a way to actually incorporate something into the massing, just a little bit of a refinement into the massing in order to help enhance these corners and make them special. So what we've done is that what you'll see here is that each of these steps represent 2 feet. And all we've done is we've just slightly pulled back that corner at each one, so that in reality, when you get to the setback of the building at this level, which you would perceive from the pedestrian plane, this surface and this surface are a difference of 13 feet. So if you were to imagine that there's a tree canopy that runs along here, along the base, the pedestrian is encountering something that's set back 13 feet from the base of the building in terms of the tower above. So it was sort of it helped us in terms of both articulating that corner in a subtle way, but it also helped us in terms of creating a more pronounced and solid mass at the base of the building. Okay? So again, here it is in plan. This is the almost unworkable plan that's required with the 20-foot lease dimensions around 20-25 foot lease dimensions around the building here. Very small floor plate. So what we've done again is we've held that 5 feet. We never in this scheme again we never push back out over that 5 feet. We start with the 5 and then we pull away from that even more down below. And then core centered, and we're just starting to show, you know, some articulation of where balconies might live to break up those long facades. Something else that I forgot to mention here, and another big move from our previous design to where we are now, there was always a glimpse of a reveal that came down the building here and tried to split that sort of boxier mass into two different volumes. What we've done now is we just said, okay, we heard some comments last time about, you know, in much the same way that the building on 7121 used the Farm Women's Market to telegraph up the building, in much the same way now we've extended that Wunderf up through our building. So in sort of a clever fenestration way, we've really highlighted that reveal. We've widened it substantially, really highlighted that again with the goal of breaking down the boxiness of this one building and making it feel like it's more the shifting of two bars. So that's where we stand right now. Again, this is we learned from the first go around that we came in with a very developed, you know, facade articulation without reaching consensus with everybody on a massing strategy. So what we've done is we want to get to a consensus on a massing strategy, and we've just started to overlay some general ideas about fenestration. But that'll be developed later. I think what we hope our goal is today is to really make sure that we're moving in the right direction with you, that this no longer feels like a boxy building, that we've really started to subdivide and break this down into smaller pieces, that we've enhanced the base, we've made it feel more substantial, we've created these very nice pronounced setbacks up above the base along both Wisconsin and Bethesda. We've broken up the base at the residential entry here, lining it with retail at the main frontages. And then again, some of the things that were responded to well in the last iteration was how we were starting to dissolve the back edge with the terraces as those turn the corner. So there were some things that we've carried through as well. This is looking at it from the other direction. This shows another thing that's important to point out is that this side, the site of what's currently Bache right now, this has a lower height, which in many ways helps us with this stepping down of the mass from the highest point down both in this direction, but then also as we're moving south to the Solaire and then to the lower rise buildings beyond that. So, we do have it, great. So the, you know, what we see is that this is really sort of the pinnacle moving up the hill in terms of height from this direction, because again, it steps down as you go down Bethesda, and then it steps down as you move towards the town of Chevy Chase. it's only a step in a long progression as you're moving north along Wisconsin. So although 225 may seem tall at this point, when you put it in context with what's already been approved in the sector plan, you start to realize that this, you know, give it another little bit of time here, and this will just be sort of a growth of that urban movement towards the center of the city. Looking at some massing precedents. So don't think of this as we're going to put a glass curtain wall in our building. This is literally just looking at how the overall sort of form of the building can be manipulated. So this is was not our intent to come back to cantilevers again. I assure you that it was really intended to be more of sort of a graceful articulation of that corner, almost like a curtain's been pulled back at that corner or something, just something very graceful and soft. Another way to do that is that this building is doing it in a similar way, but then this building is further enhancing that with an applied horizontal fin that even creates a little more texture and shadow at that corner. So these are the ideas that we're really sort of considering for those two corners. Here it is in a not glass version. This feels probably a little heavier than what we would think. I think it's probably somewhere in between the two. Maybe at the base it's a little more solid. Then once you get up into the tower, it's a little lighter. But I think that this general idea, you know, these are only 2 feet. It's just more of a textural thing than it is anything else. Okay. And then finally, looking again at now the facade articulation materiality. Once we get the massing right, I think that everybody felt pretty good about where we were before in terms of a warm color palette, in terms of a facade that creates shade and shadow, texture, a play of metal panel and something more solid, whether it's masonry, precast, something like that, but something very warm and inviting that sort of enhances the color palette of Bethesda already. And then, you know, how we do that in a more playful way on that facade is kind of yet to be determined, but these, you know, this is the way that we're moving. This is the direction that I think we're moving in. To run through the plans quickly, again, a site plan. Bethesda is north, Wisconsin to the east, Miller to the south. As we step up again, we flank, you know, all of Wisconsin, the key corner of Bethesda in Wisconsin, and then also Miller in Wisconsin, this large contiguous retail space, again, sort of responding to this retail energy that's coming from the Farm Women's Market across the street. Tucking the residential lobby then as you move back down Bethesda, get a little more residential down here, tucking that residential lobby in off the corner, a little bit removed from some of the congestion at that intersection. And then using Miller for, you know, what it's used for today, it acts as an alley. You know, every building has its parking and loading along Miller. So we did that as well, rather than trying to get loading off of Bethesda or one of these more pedestrian-friendly streets. This is our parking ramp down, loading, and then again retail from there.
And from a overall placemaking and a transformative nature for this part of Wisconsin Avenue, the idea of this amount of retail frontage does create a four-sided retail environment. So the parcel surrounding the Farm Women's Market is about 0.8 acres, which is very sizable parcel. To think of that as having retail in the middle of it in the Farm Women's Market building, a market there, surrounded then on four sides by additional retail storefronts. I mean, you begin to envision a real destination, a real place that now brings people as a destination that allows them then to activate the park and pulls them to the park and invites them to the park. So we think there's a lot of very positive benefit of having a dynamic four-sided retail environment adjacent to a park, because that's what will bring the users to the park, what will make the park active, and is ultimately what will allow, whether through the Parks Department or through, you know, our private efforts, or most likely in a combination, the type of ongoing activation that I think we would all like to see for those spaces that draw the full larger community in.
Well said. Moving up the building, just our typical floor, again, you can see the core center, 30 foot, 24 foot, you know, it gets tight, but it's a tight floor plate, it's a tight site, so we've done our best to sort of accommodate usable depths of floor plate. In conjunction with incorporating some of these setbacks in the key areas and frontages. This is where you're also starting to see that building is pulled back, giving that an even deeper setback where those corners are just slid back a little bit. And then once we get up, again, above the Bache site, the floor plate cuts off. that core is really sort of locked in a tough place because it really can't come too far over this way, can't really push over the other way, up or down. You'll see that in the parking here in a moment. But trying to maintain usable dimensions in a tight site. And then finally, in much the same way that we're doing across the street, we've got an amenity feature at the roof. This helps both from an inside-out standpoint. Obviously, you're putting amenity flanked off of your main outdoor terrace, south-facing terrace. But what that also does is it responds to the massing strategy of building up from south to north. It gives justification for some of that height and density. Mechanical space, and then a rear potentially terrace off to the Bethesda side. So then finally, the parking, in much the same way that the standalone 7121 option is pretty set and confined, you know, we, in order to get a nice, efficient sort of circular parking layout, we're very, very locked into a core location in this building. But it works well, and I think that we've sort of achieved what we hoped we could achieve with an efficient parking layout.
Is that the end of your property? I mean, that notch, that's your property
right
line?
Right here, yes, this is the property line, okay. Yes. And then a section. So, you know, I don't want to dwell on it, but four levels of parking below grade, major retail frontage along Wisconsin. This is the bank, the existing bank right there. So getting the residential lobby tucked back along the Bethesda there. Residential above, and then amenity and mechanical at the top. So that's where we are today.
Hey, can I ask some questions just as the basis again? Those photos that you had early on of the market, the historic photos, when was the market built?
I believe the market's been in operation since 1932.
February 4th, 1932.
And so the part facing on Wisconsin, was that always parking?
We believe it was always parking. We have we've engaged EHT Tracery's Emily Ike to do a full historic analysis for us. So we are at the beginning of that process. And we actually met with the team yesterday here to launch our historic resource analysis process. But this, as far as we understand, has always been parking in front. We believe that this has been primarily the front for that period of time. And so we're studying that now. I didn't mention it, and I will now, but we haven't done anything with historic staff yet, or through Emily's report to really understand the viability of potential alterations to the building. Mm-hmm. You know, the space behind the Farm Women's Market building is a 60-foot section in the plan where we're developing on building the parks on the county lots. There's a 60-foot section between the retail pavilion and the Farm Women's building. That's an incredible opportunity in our mind for a very dynamic plaza space where, you know, you think about the types of outdoor events you could have there, the types of activation, things like, you know.
I want to get into that because I hear you. I'm not seeing it the way you're talking about it right now. The other thing I want to do.
Just on that point, though.
Yeah.
One of the things we've contemplated is a potential addition to or extension off the back of the Farm Women's Market building as some sort of winter garden, or you could almost envision it as a greenhouse or something that would bring the indoor-outdoor connection to that facade that would bring a little more openness to the back of the building, because today it's got these small punched openings. It's hard to envision that sort of indoor-outdoor connection. So that's something we're going to study.
There's a diagram maybe back a couple slides from this. That one next, but go to the one that has all of Bethesda. Keep going.
Oh, it's the second slide of the presentation.
That one.
Okay.
Where is the trail?
So the trail will run.
You guys should draw this on this drawing. Now that the Capitol Crescent Trail.
So it runs here and then cuts here, at least in the runs up Bethesda Avenue, cuts across sort of the artery plaza, dips the corner of the artery plaza, and then will run on the south side of Willow Lane adjacent to the property.
And is that always going to be the trail?
I don't know the answer to that. I expect that it could be the...
There's also an underground
trail
for a long time.
Yeah, I think on this diagram you need to draw the Capitol Crescent Trail because it is so important, I think, to this plan. And whether it's the interim version or the ultimate version, I think it impacts your overall site in both ways.
There is no trail right now. It's blocked.
No, I know. I'm talking about the future.
The surface, no, there's two. There's a surface route and a tunnel route. So the tunnel route goes through the tunnel, but the surface route will be what McLean described.
There clearly is a trail right here. Right? That goes to there. And that crosses everything that you guys are talking about. And then where it comes out, if it comes out here, I'd like to know where it comes out there ultimately. And right now, in the interim, if it's going to be crossing here, I think both of those alternatives are extremely important to your plan and to the park design, and I think they need to be identified. Then
we've added it to our sketch plan, and it cannot be certainly because it's an important part of our design.
I just think it's
Robert explain.
Just to be clear, it's the surface route. It is permanent. It's
okay.
In addition to the tunnel route that's
going
to pop
great.
Up at Elm Street.
Yeah.
But you're right, it needs to be on the...
Because I think it's going to inform like what we're going to be talking about right now. The other one, I think, is go again forward some more slides. That diagram where you talked about contemplative, that one. What's your new market building in that diagram? Because it's not shown. It's not shown as part of this diagram, and I'm just wondering, you know, you show the historic market as, you know, social, and I get it, but this new, this is a big discussion point, I think, is that new market building, because I don't know what it is, and this diagram's not telling me what it is. And so I think that's just important to understand how it's going to play in this diagram.
Well, to follow up on that, I have a similar question. So I thought I understood the new market building, the vision, something similar to the Union Market, but that's not the version of the Union Market. But what's going on in the historic structure?
So I will answer from where we are today, because obviously we haven't gotten through I think our vision for all of the retail, so if you think about 25,000 square feet in the base of the building and the pavilion, and about 4,000 in the market itself, would be to create a food-oriented market destination. So most of that space would actually function as market, like a Union Market. It could be complemented with restaurants. But those uses are envisioned for all three of the retail spaces, here, here, and here. The social gathering function and the sort of civic space that having that food hall destination will allow you to have, our vision is that that encompasses all of these spaces. That is the dynamic flow, indoor, outdoor, programmable, you know, really, really active space. The thing that excites us, and I know excites others in the community, in addition to that, is thinking about the elements that don't exist in the park today that can be added when you're working with a bigger, more comprehensively planned area, like a dog park, like a great playground, splash park, you know, outdoor games, things like that. That, you know, if you go to the Union Market, those are the things that, you know, occupy people, that make it fun, that it's more than just getting an ice cream or, you know, some artisanal cheese. It's the place you spend 4 hours, you know, because you can, you know, buy nice cheese at Whole Foods or at Amazon.com. But I think our vision is that sort of very vibrant, engaged area is here. We can accommodate 40 10 by 10 tents on that 8/10 of an acre surrounding the Farm Women's Market. You can do a lot with that space, and that's our goal. But the retail pavilion is, in our minds, key to that. It activates the park, it activates that area, we think we need from a critical mass standpoint to be able to make that concept work.
Is that two levels?
Right now it's envisioned as two levels, which could have outdoor seating on the second level. You could actually have like a rooftop bar on that level, that type of thing with the market function beneath it. We are rehabilitating an historic building in Old Town Alexandria right now, where it was an old market, and we're going to have that indoor-outdoor function on the top floor with a secondary bar restaurant on the ground floor. But you have both spaces activated, both spaces engaging the outdoors. That's sort of what.
Yeah, I think, ultimately you guys are going to do this, I'm sure. But you know that the food market at the metro station failed completely.
Yes.
The other one that I know of, the Westlake Center in Seattle, which is right on the plaza, right on all the transit, that has failed. There's been a lot of kind of food court / retail markets similar to this that have failed for a lot of different reasons. And, we want to make sure, and I don't know what the answer is, but that clearly that this wouldn't fail as well. I mean, the market, the historic market is great, particularly on the weekends when they, open it all up and, you have the bazaars and everything going on there. During the week, I'm not so sure how great it is. And clearly the retail around it has never done exceptionally well. I'm skeptical, but answers.
Our goal is to be successful, but also the amount of new residents as well as office space coming to Bethesda, this becomes a destination for people, not just on weekends as it is today, but we think this is a reprieve from some of the other types of space in Bethesda, where you'll have residents as well to the east and to the west and to the north, as well as office users coming to this space multiple times throughout the week as a reprieve from the day of the grind in different parts of Bethesda. And I think that given the growth of Bethesda, what's happened around, gives us some more comfort that we can make this successful.
Yeah, the other point is that the east side of Wisconsin has always been problematic, but it's really because not only access, but each individual units are really isolated, not part of a concept. And if we create a place, that's what we need to create the viable retail and a viable farm women's market building, for the future. But otherwise, we are concerned about that very issue, and that's why we're designing what we're designing.
Yeah, specifically two more things.
Can the panel have a time to comment?
Sorry.
And let me just make a first comment. Is I think in the future when we do these, there ought to be a time limit on the presentation. We've sat through basically an hour of the presentation and had very little time to give some feedback.
You have about an hour. Don't worry about time.
Okay. So I'm going to come at this from another perspective completely. And I'd like to come back to the retail pavilion because I think it's really very important. An observation about the viability of the project in general and what's happened to Wisconsin Avenue is that for so long Wisconsin Avenue has been a highway through Bethesda, and I think what the evolution ultimately will be is it will become a street through Bethesda and a genuine street. So I think a lot of us really support the development in general that you're undertaking. I ought to give let you know I'm a resident of the town. I am an architect. I am the Bethesda area representative on the committee. I did attend your presentation to the town sometime in the middle of the summer. I did see the other submission. I've had conversations with the mayor about the project. I think, and I'm not speaking officially, you have to understand that. I'm going to speak really more as a resident, but an informed resident. I think the feeling in the town really is between option A and option B. The preference is option A. I think there is concern whether those parking lots would ever become the parks in the future. And I think this is a way of getting there faster. I think this has all been very clearly articulated in a letter from the mayor to the county about the project. I think the concern in the town really is how much is too much, how much park is the right amount of park? Is there too much development on this? So having said that, in looking really at your plan, I'd like to make some observations. Number one, if you look at the lower level of what's called the development that faces, yeah, go to that. The apartments that face the Ford building on the lower level, there's a 10-foot separation between the parking garage and the face of those apartments for the first several floors, right? I'm right about that, right?
Two floors.
Okay, 2.5 floors. You have to believe that those are not going to be really very nice apartments at all. The other observation is that you do have The other observation that I would like to make is you have the opportunity to go to 90 feet behind the Ford building and 70 feet once you get past the Ford building. I mean, one of the things that I would wonder, would you get more park if you went to a single loaded quarter, got rid of those crappy apartments, skinny the building up, pull the building back by 20 feet, and go to 90 feet. Yes, I realize there's an issue about the 70 foot. I wonder about getting a variance, and I'm speaking personally. But there is a benefit to the town, there's a benefit to the park by getting more park space back. You're getting more quality units. Yes, you're probably not getting the same GFA that you have right now. It would require a bigger financial part on the part of the county to not involve development. But I think personally the residents of the town would feel more comfortable with it. Going to 90 feet would cover up what's considered not necessarily an attractive building. You wouldn't have units facing into the Ford building. You would again have more quality units, but you would also get more park space in the back. Did you guys ever look at that as an idea? Yeah, and I realize there are problems with getting access into the loading dock and into the ramps going down into the garage, but.
So we have made moves to compress that wing of the building and to shrink the footprint of the building to put more space into the park because, and for everyone else's benefit, you know, what some of the feedback we've received from the mayor on behalf of the town and in this letter is a specific concern about the dimension in the pinch point and the narrowness of the park as you move south. So we did study the plan. We were able to move the building back while maintaining the double-loaded corridor. The constraints, you hit most of them, all of them, but the constraint of having the tower separation off of the building, dictating how far we can move the building here. The access loading and parking ramp here, which compresses how far the base of the building can move, more at the pinch point than as you move up. I mean, we are showing townhouse units fronting the park. You know, if those were gone and you just had basically blank wall against the loading ramp, you would be able to compress that corner a little bit more there. And then the last challenge, which you again were spot on, is the fact that you have a section here of 70 feet of height, and the 90 feet of height is reserved back here. And so, you know, you could have units that had stairs in them that would allow you to get up from to an eighth to the next level above in an 80-foot tall building here, but without access to the corridor.
But I guess what I'm suggesting is, what kind of process would you have to go through to get a 90-foot consistent height all the way along?
Sort of out parcel, the sort of
where it drops down to 70 feet.
I suspect it might be a zoning text amendment or something like that.
It would have to be a master plan amendment to change the zone. I mean, the only other possibility is if you get any additional height for affordable housing. You could get some additional height in that location for affordable housing, but otherwise we have our heights completely tied to the master plan.
I thought we were excluded from that.
That's not going to get you to 90. Yeah. I don't think that'll get you to 90 feet.
Even with affordable, yeah.
I thought the line was drawn, so we were excluded from that.
Right, so the concern about bringing the sort of southern wing up to 90 feet is that it's disconnected from the core.
Well,
I mean, that's why I'm suggesting, what's it take to get that extra feet in that corner to more slim the building up, get rid of really kind of bad units, look back into the floored unit, get more valuable units, but also get more park space.
Yeah, no, and it, you know, I think we have, we've heard that message. We have tried to be as responsive as we can. We do feel like this really reflects sort of the minimum footprint for a viable building that's efficient. And you know, obviously, a single unit corridor would be less efficient. It would cost more to build. We would lose density. Those things have a sort of snowballing effect, as you said, to our ability to contribute to the below grade parking, increasing the public subsidy required.
But you get more valuable units back in the process, right?
Yeah, you pick up an extra right. floor of, or two
Maybe
floors
two
potentially
extra floors
of great, you know,
of great
east
units.
Viewing units. Yeah, no doubt. I will say the other, you know, part for us and for Bernstein is that, you know, this project generally has gone from being a relatively simple project to a very complex public-private partnership with significant obligations for delivering below-grade parking that we won't own, that we'll have to turn over to the county, delivering park space to the Parks Department. There's a tremendous amount of risk in large, complex public-private partnerships generally. There's a lot of risk in turning over uses to public agencies. And so, you know, to be honest, there's only so much sort of chipping away at the overall density of the project where it still makes sense for us to undertake that incremental level of risk, incremental level of complexity and exposure through a public-private partnership. And I'd be honest, I think we're sort of at the margin already, and we've made those moves to be responsive and to try and advance the plan. Expanded the park in this location, expanded the park in this location, pulled this building down, shrunk this building, got rid of the residential here. And I think we've expressed an openness to continuing those moves and conversations with the town and other residents, but there will be a point at which sort of that incremental, even if it seems small, request tips the scales on the project. That out.
Just, I don't know if I'm full of thoughts. So what portion of the building are you talking about eliminating, and what portion are you talking about increasing?
Let me come up. I
will
adjust the screen. So these units right here, lower two levels, there's a 10-foot separation. I just touched the screen. 10-foot separation between the back of those units and the face of the garage, right?
Yes.
So what I'm suggesting was taking. So what I'm suggesting is taking those units off, moving that corridor back, making a single loaded corridor, taking area and adding two floors to basically the side of the building.
What would you gain in terms of
what you would gain is you would gain 23 you gain 23 feet. You would significantly increase this distance right here.
And what is the distance from the proposed building corner to the, I guess, the edge of the park right now?
Probably
so
about, if you look at this, it's probably about. Just to clarify, with by keeping the townhouses here as a way to activate the park, there's no room left to slide because we've got the three-lane parking entrance and we've got the loading. So although it makes a ton of sense upstairs, we would have to also then eliminate the townhouses at grade, which are used to activate them.
Well, you wouldn't have to eliminate all of them. You eliminate three or four of them, right?
So right now, from curb to building facing that corner, the tightest corner is 77 feet from here to here.
So that would be about a 30% increase.
About 130 feet from here to here, and about 175 feet from here to here. So that just gives you a sense of how it does.
And you mentioned earlier, you know, going like comprehensively on the entire site, it's almost a 5-acre park space. Did I hear that right?
We're only adding 2.7 acres, but the existing Elm Street Park is 2.1, so together, you're at 4.8. And I think that's where we as parks department are excited about what you can do with a space that big when it's planned together, as opposed to, you know, are we trying to get every use in the park? Are we trying to cram every use in the Elm Street park that exists today? Or if you think comprehensively about the features and amenities that can be added when it's 4.8 park, that's where I think the sum of the parts is huge. We have looked at that. I think it is it's challenging in a couple ways, in that it puts all of the garages for the townhouses onto the Wooner, which is a really, I think, envisioned as a through broader used access than just a true alley. But it's something that, you know, I think we would be open to exploring. It just does have it really does dramatically impact the feel of that connection when it does become all garage doors.
Again, speaking as a town resident, I do use that as a cut through. Yeah, I'll testify to that.
Yeah. And we've heard that from a lot of folks. And not to say you couldn't do it well and design it well, and I think it's something that, you know, we can go back and study. We've looked at it, and I think that our concern was just it dramatically changes the character of that road. Or what we envision as a winner now, but it would open. It might create about 12 feet of additional dimension if we were to do that and just align everything to that back end. But we can go back.
If I could now circle back to the retail pavilion, I guess one of the concerns that I have is how the retail pavilion basically bifurcates the park on the west, on the east side, from basically the historic building. And could you consider, well, number two, find a way of using that building to get people to go through it? Again, this is not a park for the town, it's a park for Bethesda. And it'd be great if they could be tied together in a stronger fashion, either by separating, cutting the building in half, decreasing the amount of setback you have on Willow Street in order to do that, create a paved space between them. But you would also have to move that parking ramp to another location, because that is the physical barrier that prevents that retail pavilion from connecting right into the park. And why couldn't you put that parking ramp right on the side of Willow, just kind of slip that right down and relatively easy? So, I mean, it's an in ramp, not an out ramp.
We do want to find ways. I think we totally agree of enhancing that east-west connection, and I think that doing the retail pavilion right will do that. And so that's something that we want to spend a lot of time in care study. We heard a lot about the importance of and you can actually see the Capitol Crescent Trail in green. It's light, but we shadowed it in here. But the importance of this edge on Willow as being a primary driver and view corridor into the park from Wisconsin.
But isn't that a fallback when you had the residential built out over the retail pavilion as a way of trying to get those connected together? I think it's less important when it becomes a freestanding pavilion that you maintain that setback that you have on Willow. I think it's more important to create a really successful space. I think there is, and I agree with you, some skepticism as to, well, I think we would love to see it work. Skepticism as to whether it will work or not. I think the residents of the town kind of favor that as an idea, but again, is it being done the right way?
So I just want to hit the business, because I think it's a very good one, and we But Eden's is a national leader in experiential retail. They run what is one of the most successful market or food halls in Union Market, you know, nationally. That's why we brought them to the table. I will say the idea of having a restaurant or two, which should actually pay rent and should be economically viable to offset what we anticipate to be a not hopefully economic and viable food hall, is actually built into our analysis. We aren't planning on the food hall here as the way we're making money on this project. It's not the economic driver. It is the amenity that makes this whole thing work. It is what sustains the legacy of the farmers market. So, you know, like just the operating costs of a food hall make no economic sense for the amount of rent they can pay and the amount of cost that they have. So supplementing it with some restaurants, which can be profitable, and having the eyes wide open understanding that we're doing this from a placemaking perspective, not an economic driver perspective, are part of how we're trying to protect ourselves from, you know, the national trend of people really like food halls, but they don't make money.
I wonder, I mean, from what I know of retail, my designing over the years, you know, the narrower the space, I mean, first of all, retail should be double loaded, right? On a street, typically even better if it's a very narrow street, so that you have the interaction on both sides. And, you know, typically sort of destination retail in the middle of a park or a plaza like this, you know, have a lot of turnover. And so I think what you just suggested potentially answers one of the questions. If that pavilion was able to come this way, right, then you have a very likely viable retail on the other side of retail, on the other side of Willow, because they would face each other. And so, you know, once that develops, that site develops, you'd have a double-loaded retail there. And it gets to my other, I mean, it, you know, for the future development, it stimulates the development, and it also stimulates, I think, the development that maybe comes up the street. But the other thing, I think, is this piece. And that, I kind of question it the way it is now. I think that could be a wonderful little retail moment in the middle there. If
Pottery Barn.
You know, if the market faces on to the market there, maybe it's more of a sort of a, you know, why is the Wunderf there? So that you get sort of the plaza that becomes a retail sort of street / plaza. And I think it would much improve the retail in that new building, and it would improve the retail potentially, or the use of the retail in the historic market. And you really make that something special.
And I will say that's our you know, we have a number of processes to work through, a number of audiences to meet with. And, you know, the historic preservation process, the environmental settings surrounding the Farm Women's Market are really key stakeholders in this process. We do want to, exactly as you mentioned, make this a dynamic two-sided space with significant activation and porosity in that corridor. That's really exciting to us, and I think part of what makes this project work. Our hope is that working with historic staff and the HBC, if we are staying true to the Wisconsin frontage of the building, might there be a way to get alterations or additions or adjacent development on the back of the building that would create that storefront on the other side. Whether it's more openings and glass on the back of the building, or this idea of a glass, you know, sort of winter garden on the back that is storefront, that's animated, that flows in and out from the space. That's certainly our goal. We just know we have
you're going to have a nice plaza park facing on Wisconsin. I think that could be wonderful. And multi-use, you know, you set up kiosks and so on in there. I think you're going to have a beautiful park on this side. And by the way, you know, if this development doesn't happen, I think there would be a park there someday, but it'd probably be half the size because you'd need the rest of the site to help pay for it, unless it was fully publicly paid for. But so you have the park to the west, you have the park to the east, and the piece in between is different. It's more of a real retail type of thing. Not maybe unlike what you see in Bethesda Lane.
Bethesda Lane, yeah. With the advantage of having visibility from Wisconsin Avenue, yeah. Having the metro literally a block away. I mean, I think those are some of the things that give us confidence.
I think that would be a great experience. So maybe, you know, maybe it's a little less green in the middle, but more active with a lot of uses. And I'll get a little bit to the architecture.
Well,
on that one.
Before we do that, because I think we're focused right now on a very, very small detail of what's a much bigger project, and we can't forget we also are commenting on the building across the street.
Yep.
So maybe we can ask each of the DAP members to just give some general comments, because some folks haven't spoken up at all yet, and I'd like to hear some general comments about the overall project, because I think we're going to come back and we're going to talk in much more detail about some of the landscaping, but I think there's some big picture issues. I know, Rod, you had started, one of your big picture issues has to do with the wing facing the park.
Yes, the percentage of park to the building.
Mm-hmm. Are there other DAP members who want to really talk about some of the big picture issues?
Well, we were very concerned about the curb cut off of Wisconsin that fronted your building. The loading docks that we saw like a couple months ago, right? And then that turn, and then Willow, of course, goes in one direction. And the congestion because of the loading docks and the access to the parking garage all caused, and then shared with pedestrians, and then getting from the parking lot, that's the existing parking lots, through that slot to Wisconsin Avenue. Can you talk a little bit more about that scheme as opposed to option A?
Option B.
Option B.
It is largely unchanged in terms of vehicular circulation as contemplated for option B. Here, I will not use this. We would have the drive running along the front to the winner between the farmer's market and the building. We pushed the building a little further to the north to get that separation, and we've sort of proposed that we'll relocate the farmer's market building a little further to the north.
So you're moving the farmer's market building?
The farmer's market building would move approximately 23 feet to maintain a 40-foot separation between our building and the farmer's market, so we could have this right away.
Because it was a tight fit before, so that's how you're achieving more flexibility on the sidewalk.
Subject to historic. Yes. So it's definitely a key part of the conversation with historic, and we've only started that process now. But we maintain that 40 feet of separation to create safe pedestrian passage, vehicular passage, fire access, all of those things in that space. And I think ultimately we're in this scheme where we get a little more comfortable with the idea of that access point is that if we have 150 called parking spaces in this parking garage, that isn't, especially one block from the metro, located adjacent in a mixed-use environment with all of the office surrounding it, that isn't going to be a very high-turn parking garage. And in this scenario, we only have, I can't remember how much ground floor we have, it's between 4,000 and 5,000 square feet. So 8,000 or 9,000 square feet of retail total in the whole plan. So even that reduces the amount of deliveries, loading. But certainly the design would be critical.
And we can manage, I think, the loading for the residents as they move in and out.
And then, so it's a two-directional, obviously. And then it's exit on to Willow. And what is the, where do you go if you exit on to Willow? Because Willow is one direction.
It's a two-directional, meaning you could actually...
Oh, it allows it to come.
Willow is two-way.
Two ways. For the first part of the throat.
Yes.
With the other extension of the lobby. One way.
point really.
So I think that's a problem. I think you have to find a better location for getting into that parking lot. It would seem to be, because you're missing that whole opportunity of the relationship of the pavilion to the park itself.
So we study only conceptually the idea of putting it inboard into the retail building itself. And that is something that would help, although it obviously is still a major obstacle to make that back
turn.
Use work by the time you come out, you know, with a double lunar, basically, as you come out. Definitely something that we know needs to be explored because that connection from the pavilion to the park is, you know, key.
Well, and I think that having an access there to parking on that side is probably a positive thing for the retail too, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Oh, sure. Oh, yeah.
So that you know that you can get in there and park and enjoy it.
I think the massing has gotten better in terms of that because of the relationship to the market. And of course, really unfortunate not to be able to do it. I guess it's kind of a weird conversation. There was kind of blessing or not blessing option.
There's just a lot of
B based on like A better.
Yeah.
You know, it's like I personally like my apartments are at the top of the pavilion. So
yeah.
I think when you've lost them by getting rid of those, I think they help.
Sentiment on the town, and including myself, is that building those apartments above the pavilion separates the park, and it becomes a park. The one on the east side becomes a park for the town, and the one on the west side becomes a park for Bethesda. And they just clearly create a wall between them.
I see. I can understand that. It doesn't necessarily mean that they don't like architecture.
Well, I can understand the architectural merits of it, but I don't understand the planning merits of it.
Exactly.
So.
Exactly.
That's where we need to be like the neutral party,
right?
Well, I haven't said anything up to this point, but I think that everybody knows that I'm going to say something. Option A is a gigantic step forward in terms of solving the many problems, not only from the J side, but I think the viability of the project is enhanced significantly. I think that let's go back to some of the comments from last time. I think the notch in the building and aligning with the market house certainly has, the way I thought it might, I think it has improved the cohesiveness of the plan. And I think that that even though it's not a full setback along the top of the base, I think that it makes sense. You're actually getting more depth in the center of the building, which I also think is a nice way to enhance the pedestrian experience of the building. It's not just one wall, but it's actually broken with a couple of spots. I think dragging the rest of the residential along the park is working well. I appreciate Ron's comments about perhaps using the 90-foot and thinning the building up to Turkey Creek. But on the other hand, when I look holistically, you've got the upper part that exists, which is a wider, bigger component, then it narrows a little bit as it comes to proposed for the residential building, and gradually becomes a linear part as it goes south. And I think that transition is actually very sound in terms of, I always think of Rhombus and semi, not private, but semi-enclosed space that is going to be a benefit to the retailers ultimately. I do share the concern that this pavilion, the new pavilion, is separated from the park by the ramp. I've looked at several different locations. One would be coming to Sharp Right, but I don't think that's correct. But I think if you buy my idea that Willow is the link and there are fingers that go off of this, it becomes less important that, that the pavilion actually directly relates to the park, in my opinion, again. So I think the architectural components have certainly improved on the east side of the site. Haven't talked about the west side yet, but I am very intrigued with the advancing configuration of the western building. Now, I think that increasing the base, effectively visually pulling it back from for the first four or five levels to almost what's recommended in the plan is very successful. And I think the fact that the building again comes out but in gradual steps as it gets higher in the building is not a negative from a pedestrian standpoint at all, and in fact we're creating an architectural statement that potentially can be not only different from other things that are happening in Bethesda, but an exciting resolution of what is a very tight site. So I commend you, if, again, it's my personal opinion, but I think that building is going to end up being an exciting and dramatic addition to that. So as I said, I had something to say.
I kind of agree with pretty much everything that George just said. I think the development team should be applauded here for taking a look at this entire project comprehensively compared to what we saw last time around. I think it's a very innovative business solution. This is the way the development industry should be working together with county staff, planning staff, to achieve the park that's envisioned, the park space that's envisioned in the sector plan, and maintaining the county public parking, which I think is fantastic. And we might be getting lost a little bit here, that both the parks and the parking is being maintained here. I think, I understand Rod's comments and the community's comments about the size of the square footage of the park. I mean, Bethesda doesn't have enough park space, and so having every square foot extra counts. But, as looking at this comprehensively, as 4.8 acres of activated program park space, intertwined, I think is a very generous amount of park space. And I think that with the massing that's being proposed here works pretty well. That's overall big picture comments.
Well, the only comment I'd like to make is that if you look at the master plan, the aspiration is set up that there's both those parks, parking lots, would become entire parks. And so what is the right balance? I think we support, or I support, development of this to get this to be parks faster. I just question how much park you're really getting out of it. When you recognize how little parks there are in Bethesda and the percentage that you're giving up.
Two comments. One is, and I've already started to make it on the urban design rather than just the architecture, and trying to make great spaces. And so, between those retail buildings. But I think something else that plays to the kind of the urban design of the architecture is what I don't, I'm probably going to get shot here, but what I don't like about these two towers is the symmetry, both of them. And I think that it's in my opinion, this is more important to recognize in your building, that space coming across, and then basically having a solid backdrop to the historic building, rather than trying to align this thing in the middle of this building, perfectly in the middle, and creating that just a strange symmetry. I think asymmetry would be much better here. I think that this piece could be over here that would accentuate the space in between the two buildings, and then this could be a face, particularly at this base, as a backdrop to the market. And I think, likewise, this symmetry is really weird to me. And I think because you're trying to heighten that corner, that I think it should be asymmetry. And I think that, again, particularly if this could get widened and become something very prominent, it would be nice to have a face, essentially, over here that responds to that urban space coming through the park. Right now, you know, this slot is shifted over. It just seems that, you know, why isn't that wider than that, for instance?
Just A, B as opposed to A, B, C.
Exactly. Or you know, A, B, A. Mm-hmm. I think it is an A and a B thing, and the B is the face to that street.
Oh, those are interesting comments, because we're now seeing a much different project with option A as opposed to option B. And so the slot space in the symmetrical building you described on the east side is calling into question. It's really calling into question because of the 90-foot building, you know, closer to Turkish, et cetera. So I share your concern. I think the biggest problem is it's sort of a SketchUp model. It's kind of just abstract, and it doesn't read as well as, you know, a fully rendered set of elevations, et cetera. So we're just talking about massing primarily. But I think your observations have a lot of merit.
The other thing with the base is, you know, the guidelines talk about a base, but they don't talk about that base being 100% of your building faces. And so, like we talked about in the last building, there can be moments where the tower actually comes down to the ground rather than to a base. And I think, so that said, you know, the 7121, in my opinion, I think that the setback to the base is probably much more important where it faces the market than maybe where it faces Wisconsin. And because I just think it gives it a better scale to the market building by having that deep setback. And so maybe on Wisconsin there's something that acknowledges the base once you get around the corner, but maybe at that corner the tower might come all the way down. And so again, it gets to the kind of the asymmetry of it, but you know, that's where I think the importance is. And then on the other side, you know, do you need the deep setback? And you're actually showing it on the back, you know, further west, where the tower is basically coming all the way down. It'd be nice if you could get that bank and expand that direction, but. Nonetheless, I think, you know, I just think that looking at asymmetry more might help you as far as, you know, acknowledging certain moves that you're making with the spaces.
That's where you like Bethesda elevation better than Wisconsin elevation.
Yeah.
On the west building. Mm-hmm. Because AB as opposed to, you know, AAA or ABA, et cetera. Mm-hmm. I think there's too many moves on Wisconsin. I think you'd learn from Bethesda.
All of those are circumstances, the idea of base, setback, and then the building coming out.
Yeah.
The ABA can be resolved and go forward, but I think that's what I like about the West Building.
Yeah.
Is the way it's dealing with the whole setback issue. I also want to point out that in Scheme B, the alignment with the Market House still makes some sense in my humble opinion, because of what we talked about last night. What's happened is residual or dangling participle from Scheme B has been transferred here. I think the idea of some sort of building in that central space between the market and the new market, and recognizing that the building is a whole new idea,
scheme might have been okay for you know, option B, because making it symmetrical and turning the corner because that faces the parking lot and you know, Chevy Chase, et cetera, well, then the symmetry sort of kind of makes sense.
Yeah.
Whereas here, it doesn't, it no longer make sense. So is that keeping that legacy of the B scheme onto this A scheme?
I agree with these comments that were made, but in defense of them, I think the previous design for the east side of Wisconsin, it was a building design that was totally alien to the site.
Yeah.
Right. And now they're trying to make it more compatible with the site, which is the right move.
Yeah.
They can take it to the next step as you're discussing, and I think the comments are right on the mark. The one thing, caution that I give about the west side is that I have a lot more comfort when I see the precedent images than what I see as a diagram.
Yeah.
I've done enough business travel in Asia and the Middle East to know when every building tends to be an iconic building, it just becomes a horrible environment. So you have to recognize we are going to get some iconic buildings. We're going to get the redevelopment. Is it the Apex site or the Artery site, the redevelopment of the police headquarters, the redevelopment of the Metro site. So you can take maybe one, two iconic buildings. I think if you look at the precedent images, there's a lot more comfort in what I see in that. And maybe here, a suggestion that you may be trying just a little too hard. I think the comments that I'm making is symmetrical about on Wisconsin, I think is a good comment. If it were just two moves and two towers, a major vertical element and a supporting element would be the right move. If you look at the diagram, and I think this is pretty obvious, that you look at that massing model on the west side, it almost looks like you've done an addition to a historic base. And there ought to be more compatibility between the base and the tower above, that the language ought to be a bit more consistent instead of looking like you've built a new tower on an existing historic base.
Mm-hmm.
So when you overhead out more when it goes higher, is that a reason why you have different paint when you go up
on the west side? It was just an idea of sort of breaking down the scale as you get closer to the ground and having a more grand gesture as you get up to the top. It's really a proportional thing. If you switch those and you get smallest when you get to the top, mm-hmm. it always feels bad. So you sort of let those horizontals get a little tighter at the bottom and then the verticals take over.
Well, they could be consistent.
They could be consistent, yeah. I mean, that's something we could look at as well.
Show.
It's a more consistent gesture along the
whole
side.
Yeah. The same language.
So if I could speak of personal preference, the one I like is the one on the lower two in from the right. And if you go to the next page, go to your next page.
Sorry about this one, sorry. That one that's from this one right
here.
Yeah,
and then go to the next page. You know, I think all those images are really, really very beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's a real discipline to them that doesn't attempt to be a iconic building, but still has a prominent role.
Yeah. What I had mentioned when I started was that I think that we got too much into the facade and some of that rigor and everything before we had a massing in the beginning.
Right. Yeah.
Now I think we're starting to find a massing that we're comfortable with, and we'll reintroduce that, some of that rigor.
The middle top is things that you're starting to hint at.
Yeah.
And you're sketching.
Yes, what it sounds like, honestly, is it really sounds like maybe what we did is we just went a step too far widening.
Yeah.
So it was too narrow for
yeah.
a meal before. We've made it too much now. Maybe there's just a tuning so that does remain a more slender, taller A reveal and then a little wider,
mm-hmm.
shorter B element rather than the
more like
yeah.
Right.
going to maintain the what?
Park.
Park. I think we've talked about it being a owned by Maryland National Capital Park and Planning, but there may be a management agreement with the private developer to do management.
I think that's important.
Because that's a lot of law. Just
yeah. It's very important to all of us, obviously, to be maintained to a very high level, and if it's going to be programmed and activated, that's very important. And finding a way to insulate, you know, the park and the project from fiscal challenges and the, you know, maintenance budget of the parks department would be something that would be important to us.
Clint.
My comment, I'm sure you're well aware of this, you know, your parking lot extends well out into your green space. You're showing a lot of trees going over that. You're showing no soil depths at all.
So we have just
and I'm
built
sure it's
a park
just
for the county right. On top of a below-grade parking garage at our Chevy Chase Lake project just off Connecticut Avenue. So we're very familiar with some of those challenges. And I will say, because of that, we are right now studying the concept of a three-level garage that would reduce the footprint under portions of the park. So we right now we're at a two-level garage that extends further out. We're looking at that.
That'd be great.
The Elm Street part is very dark.
Yeah.
And not necessarily well,
it's
not utilized very well, and it's got, its maintenance is kind of suspect, and its ground plane is phenomenally uneven in terms of the different kinds of pavings and different kinds of dirt, you know, not much grass, etc. So I think that's something to take into consideration about heavy editing that should be done probably in that park, as well as then the addition of these other parks, etc. I wouldn't leave that just the way it is.
Well, what also I think would help it when you see the whole site plan,
yeah,
it would be, I think, nice if you could get a couple of those massive species trees,
yeah,
you know, maybe just a couple,
daylight,
coming across the street, coming across Willow.
Right.
So you had one or two, you know, just these big trees there that kind of could make the transition from one side to the next, rather than just a perfectly, you know, edged grass field.
Yeah, you would anticipate, though, with the development of the parking lots into a park, that you would have more awareness of the Elm Street Park and would get greater use because of this development.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, it's hidden.
Hidden.
It's very few people use it. It's more of a green space than really an active park.
Yep.
And it needs to become an active park.
So we've thought about having specialty pavement or even potentially tabletop intersection. That tabletop road between the park spaces to really enhance that connection. I think I love the idea of bringing some mature trees down to smooth that transition. One thing, I have two little kids and a mother-in-law with a dog, so I think a lot about dog parks and playgrounds. And some of my favorite playgrounds and dog parks in Northwest DC have been built into mature canopies. Been to the McLean Gardens Park on Quebec Street or some of the other new parks that DC has built, the idea of actually incorporating a playground or a dog park into the existing Elm Street Park where you have the canopy of the existing trees and you have uneven, you know, ground actually is a pretty exciting opportunity for those
And McLean, you mentioned that that we'll be having meetings and discussions with Historic, but similarly, the team's going to be doing the same thing with the Parks Department.
Right. Yeah. So we plan on having a charrette or series of charrettes with the Parks Department, with the community, and with other stakeholders at Park and Planning and elsewhere to talk about the elements of the park, what are the priorities for the park, where do those elements go, what are those alternatives.
Just an observation, because if the county were to assume maintenance, that would roll off, it seems as it would be important for the project to assess that you maintain some control over the programmatic aspects of the park, because it takes not only a village, it takes somebody committed to
Are there any more comments from the panel right now? No? I do want to ask park and planning staff if there are any specific issues that you need clarity from the panel on for the sketch plan phase, or any questions or clarifications that you guys have, Stephanie? No?
Nothing that hasn't been already discussed.
Okay, great. All right, so would the panel be willing to take three comments from the public? That'll take about an additional 9 minutes or so. Are you okay with that?
Yep.
Okay, great, thanks. So we'll have three comments, one Naomi, then Alicia, and then Amanda.
Thank you for taking public comments. I'm a resident of the area, but not the town of Chevy Chase. So I'm looking at that mostly as a pedestrian coming up Wisconsin Avenue. That's how I approach Bethesda. And I'd like to say that I like the building on the west, basically, although I think it could be improved by listening to many of the comments of the panel. I think it's an interesting building and very different from other things that we've seen so far in Bethesda. On option A, for the east side, I kind of feel a little bit like I've fallen through a rabbit hole, because I sat through all of the planning board work sessions and the council work sessions, and it was pretty clear that the community expected much of the parking lots to be parks, not greenway. And it's an important distinction, because the greenway really is a buffer for the town. The parks are meant for the entire community. So I'm a little dismayed at the density that's proposed here, and the amount of open green space is less than I, as a community member, had hoped for. Let me make some very specific comments, though. Coming up from Wisconsin and looking from Wisconsin Avenue, the pavilion really blocks any view of what's behind the farm market. And I would be very happy to see the pavilion go away. I don't like it. I would note that Bethesda has a fair number of retail vacancies, and it would be really awful if that ended up supporting even more retail vacancies. I would say, however, that the proposal to make the Wooner between the two more of a narrow street with retail on both sides makes it more attractive in many respects, including a safety aspect, which is important to me. I think you're going to have a lot of kids in this area, and I've been down to the wharf. I've seen the Wooner there. It's wider. It's longer. There's a separated pedestrian walkway on it, and this is not quite that. So turning it into more of a retail street is attractive. I'm not crazy about how the green space narrows so much as the development on Lot 24 moves down towards Leland. And I think it's very possible that the green space by the townhouses will be perceived as belonging to the townhouses. So if this continues to be the plan, if there's some way to indicate that it's open to the public, that should happen. I also, that's not visible at all from Wisconsin Avenue. So that's really going to be used mostly by people in the town, I think, not by the community, which is something less than what we had expected from the plan. So that's my comments. Thank you.
My name's Leslie Lee Shadalahunty. I live in West Bethesda at Old Georgetown Road and Battery Lane. And I've shopped at the Montgomery Farm Women's Cooperative Market since I moved to Bethesda in 1997. And I do buy my artisan cheese there, my fresh eggs there, not from Whole Foods. I have three concerns, one of which was been pretty well addressed, the pedestrian crossing between the park green areas. Because, of course, if you're going to invite children and small animals, you're going to have a conflict with other pedestrians, cyclists, and cars. My second concern is the emphasis on retail. Montgomery County buys online. Just look at yourself. Look at your pocketbook. Look inside. Look at your devices inside your briefcases. Unless what's being retailed is food, drink, entertainment, or perhaps education, which has not been addressed in a county that is the education, the public education, we need more spaces. You might want to factor that in. Unless physical presence is required in these spaces, people are not going to come. The only retail lease there is going to be hair and nail salons. Okay, my third point is the heritage of the market is being lost. The documentation here is calling it the Bethesda Market. That sounds like a grocery store. It's not. It was the Montgomery, not Bethesda, it was Montgomery, as in the county. Women was a women's site, and it was a cooperative market. So I'd like you all to retain the name and the size, shape, and nature of the market. Keep it, keep the history, keep the heritage, not the his story. Don't turn it into a man's story, it's not. And keep the heritage, maybe if you can grandfather in the existing vendors to keep some trace of authenticity to the place. I don't like the idea of moving it even an inch, but I understand health and safety. You know, but the building is the building and it is symmetric. The winter garden idea is not a bad idea. I don't like the idea of blowing off any of the sides, because once you do that, it's a thin entry wedge. You're all going to knock it down. And the fourth thing is, well, not really the fourth, I'd like to conclude. I think we're all in favor of more green space in downtown Bethesda. I just don't want this to be a white elephant. I don't want to be another white Flint mall in downtown Bethesda. Thank you.
Hi, thank you all again for taking comments. My name is Amanda Farber. I'm with East Bethesda and also the IAC. And I see many positives to this project. So I'm just gonna make a couple points here, which is that, so unless you're working or living on the top floor of a nearby building, these renderings are not what it's gonna look like. I would really like to see some renderings from the pedestrian perspective. This, I think that's really important for this location. If you haven't had the chance to go stand in the space, I think that's also really important to stand there and envision how this space will be taken up, both in the parking lot and the market. Along those lines, I also think a 3D model is warranted for this location. Next, the design guidelines specifically say that you must look at the shadows in this location and how they affect the park. So I think it's important to have these shadow studies early on. We're talking about buildings to the south and to the west, so we are talking about shadow impacts. You can just look at Veterans Park in Bethesda and Woodmont Triangle to see the impact what a 175-foot building has on a park next door. In terms of Elm Street Park use, currently there is a terrible playground there. It's well past its lifespan, but there are daycares there all the time. There's kids using it all the time despite that, because there aren't a lot of other places to go. We will have the surface trail and we will have the tunnel coming out of the northern portion of Elm Street Park. So you will have it activated that way. Like my neighborhood's looking forward to having that access actually from Pearl Street across and down. But just that needs to be considered in these renderings. And as I know McLean knows, we've had three pop-up dog parks there that have all been super successful with literally hundreds of people who came out for that. So there are ways to activate it. Last two things, the reference to Union Market. Union Market is great, but I think we need to look at more food halls, more markets as examples. There is a very comprehensive food hall study that was done by Cushman and Wakefield that I spent a lot of time reading, that goes through every single food hall and market in the entire United States and the size and what's in it. And I think we need to look to that to say, do we really need this much retail space here, especially in that back building, because we're talking about a lot of retail space. And last, talking about the building on the west side. So Miller, this hasn't been brought up yet. That's a residential building. We are having lots of problems with the lack of pull-offs in Bethesda. Delivery vehicles, service vehicles just block the sidewalk, they block the lanes, they block bike lanes. So for that building, I understand you're using Miller Avenue. Miller Avenue is very, very narrow. I would want to see if you can actually fit a delivery truck to be able to back in to that loading bay off of Miller, and where will the service vehicles go? We know they don't pull into the parking garages. So where are they going to go? Are they going to go across the street and just park on the Wooner? That's not a great solution. So I think that needs to be talked about. Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
I have a question, George, I think for you, because I didn't perceive it this way. Some of the comments are talking about a structure in between those two buildings. And you said something about structured. I thought you were talking about actually just forming the space as structured. Were you talking about a physical structure?
It is one of the things that ran through my mind. I thought that they're very, Winter Garden has been mentioned a number of times, and they can be very exciting places and facilitate a lot of things happening around them. So that had not been in my mind up until thinking about it today. Okay. Yes.
I guess I hadn't been thinking about that, but it just came to me. Obviously, your comment made an impact on some people. I was always thinking, the lights and, all of that, but not necessarily a structure.
I guess just the problem is that in our climate, we've got 6-7 months where we've got another 5 months where it doesn't work as well.
Yeah.
And it just seemed to be something I didn't mention. Design of the market, the new market hall, is extremely important, and I don't see it developed enough yet.
No.
And what happens between the two?
Yeah.
Would even more so.
Yeah, exactly.
You have,
yeah. So this is a sketch plan. I think
yep.
We can throw out ideas.
Okay.
But I think the shadows, sun and shadow diagrams are very important.
All right, so just to briefly summarize what we've heard from the panel, generally, of course, there's a preference for option A if it's feasible. However, we do have two members of the panel that particularly would like to see a greater proportion of green space on the site and potentially compressing that 70-foot building and seeing where you could get more height, but while compressing the building and getting more green space. There's also
three people.
Three people then. Thank you. And then also that there should be more attention to the east-west connections on the site from Wisconsin back to the park, just looking exactly on how those connections happen, should there be some widening along Willow or on the Woodarch so that there's more connection from the Wisconsin to the east. And then also looking at the massing of the buildings and as you develop them further, consider not having so much symmetry. Consider looking at asymmetry and also creating some verticality in the building. You don't have to have the base along the entire building. And maybe Wisconsin is different than along the market, for example, for the building on the right. There was the question of potentially putting a structure between the two buildings that we just heard. A winter garden or some connection between the two buildings, and then also, of course, the shadow studies to look at how the buildings interact with the park. Are there any other major comments that, go ahead.
That parking access.
Yeah.
Parking,
yeah.
Yes, that there's separation from the pavilion right now to the park because there's a parking ramp. So explore if there's another way to get some connection between the first floor of the pavilion to the park. Are there other comments? That are major that I didn't capture? No? All right, so the first question is about public benefit points. Do folks feel like the project is moving in a direction to receive at least the 10 minimum points required, exceptional design points?
Yeah.
Okay, great. And then I'd like to take a straw vote. So that would be support or not support the project. I'll start with support.
But an option A, I'm assuming.
So that's an interesting question, actually. I guess we could take it one by one.
Support of option A with conditions.
Okay. Yeah. All right. So we'll do we'll do three for each then. We'll do support with conditions, and not support. We'll start with option A. So those who support option A, one, all right. And then support option A with conditions, all right. And the conditions are to meet the recommendations that we just went through, okay. And then not support option A, okay. And then now for option B, we're gonna do support with conditions or not support. So option B, who supports?
That's tough.
Yeah.
It is tough.
Yeah.
Does option B go ahead if you don't reach the deal between all the parties? Is that what
the entire discussion here was on option A.
Yeah, I mean that's...
So option B is the evolution of the original concept plan.
As long as they change...
You would almost have to come back and have this meeting again if in fact option B is going to be the one that happens. Because then I think there's a lot of other comments that could happen.
Okay, so we can write that down, actually, rather than...
Because in option B, they at least they move the market in order to make, and the improvement on the west side, et cetera. So they have moved forward in a positive way with
but you really got
B, but we want to see it again.
Can I weigh in real quick? Because the two options that have been presented, staff will be evaluating and reviewing both of those and making a recommendation to the board. So when I hear come back, what do you mean by that? Come back after or when it comes in with a site plan if they decide to do one option versus the other? I think we probably need a little direction on that in terms of where you see that headed, because we are looking at both options that have been submitted.
So just to clarify, the reason we've submitted both options is because obviously there are a number of factors, some of which are in our control, but many of which are not, as to whether option A will be a viable development scenario. So we have to, reserve our rights,
sure.
As it relates to option
that.
B, which is why we submitted.
Well, many of the good things that you've done over the past few months apply to option B, particularly the west side, and even the east side, where you line the building, things like that. I mean, I personally, at the stage that you're at, wouldn't have a problem in saying support with
conditions.
As it goes through. I mean, I don't think it's going to turn into something completely different.
Well, that's a good point. That's a good point, John. Yeah, that's a good point.
Good things have happened up to this point. And one would presume that as it goes to site plan and forward, that those things would flesh out.
So we could do a similar straw vote that we did for option A. Again, support with conditions, and not support. So if you are in favor of supporting option B, okay, there aren't any. How about support with conditions to meet the recommendations? Let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4. So it's all 5. And then not support, there was 0. Okay. All right. So are there any more comments before we wrap up?
Yes. Where do we go from this? If we want to follow up, we can email Laura Shipman at MontgomeryPlanning.org.
No, if you want to follow up,
you're Laura. Okay.
That's Laura.
And then who's Laura?
Sorry, no, right so there. Stephanie Dickel is the lead reviewer for the
yes,
project.
She's Laura.
If you want to be following the project through its development review, through development review, then go to Stephanie Dickel.
Oh,
she's the lead
reviewer. Your part then. And then, McLean, obviously, you're the lead from the Bernstein.
The Bernstein EYA side, and then the Folger Pratt side is represented.